Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Our next guest is an attorney, national sports law analyst, as heard on ESPN and Fox Sports. We're talking to Dan Lust, who is a sports litigator, joining us now. Where are you located?
I am in New York, but I'm like Carmen Sandiego. I'm all over the world. I could be anywhere.
You are anywhere and everywhere. Let's start with the Astros. This caught my eye today, and in fact, it was your tweet that I first saw it in. Astros fans suing the Astros?
Yeah, you know, it's the fourth of its kind, and I wouldn't be surprised if we actually hit double digits in this, John. Basically, you have breaking news on this basically by the hour. So for those that haven't heard, you know, we had the two DFS users that were suing the Astros for allegedly, you know, obviously influencing their results with this cheating scam. We had the Mike Bolsinger stuff. And now, you know, we have some Astros and Astros violence. Season ticket holders are suing the team for putting a secretly deceptive product on the field, and they're alleging that because of this sign-stealing scam that they're going to be hurt further in the years to come because they're forfeiting draft picks. So just when you didn't think it could get any weirder, we hit a full new level with Astros fans now going after their own team.
Rob Manfred has come out and said, look, you know, I think it's symbolic if I had stripped the World Series trophy from the Astros. The Dodgers are mad about that. The Yankees are mad about that. But the whole idea that players got immunity, should Manfred have gone after players? Could he have successfully disciplined them?
See, this is the interesting – I mean, so when it came out originally, right, Manfred said that he's going to give immunity to all players. Said no players would be punished. So we didn't really know why he was saying that. We just knew that, you know, he was going to punish the GM and the manager. So in recent days, what has came out is that Manfred's logic behind not punishing the players was because he was fearful of a player or however many players he suspended filing a grievance against him to try to get the suspension overturned. So what he's basically saying, and that's if anyone that's read the memo, I'm happy to, you know, to break it down. But basically, there was a memo in 2017 that Manfred sent out to all 30 teams. He said, stop using technology to steal signs, because he had heard about it through Apple Watches and any number of things with the Red Sox, the Astros. So what Manfred is saying that through his investigation, it was revealed that Jeff Luhnow, the GM of the Astros, just did something as simple as failing to forward that email to the team and failing to tell them this in any way, shape, or form. So what Manfred is saying is, hey, if I suspend these players and they weren't put on notice that technology was illegal, the suspension is going to be unwound in a grievance proceeding, and I'm going to look really bad. So that's kind of what's coming out. If that explanation doesn't fly with you or your listeners, you wouldn't be alone.
Yeah, I keep looking at it and keep thinking, did he cut a deal with the Astros directly saying, hey, look, we won't take away your title as long as you get rid of the GM and the manager? This thing doesn't feel like it's over right now. It feels like it's just beginning.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've kind of pointed this out. What Manfred has done, he's kind of backed himself into a corner, because by saying, you know, well, if the Astros would have got this memo, then they would have known it was illegal, and then we could have suspended them. First, you know, there's something in the law called actual notice, and then there's something called constructive notice. Just because they didn't get the email, right, it wasn't printed and left in their you know, locker, that doesn't mean they didn't know it was illegal, right? We've heard this in the past couple of days and weeks since it's come out. They kind of knew what they were doing, what was wrong, right? AJ Hinch is destroying managers. They don't necessarily need a memo to know what they're doing is wrong, right? And the league, people speak. People, you know, I'm sure, let's say someone like the Yankees got the memo or former players. I'm sure this was you know, spoken around baseball. But, John, I think the part where I'm saying he's backing himself into a corner, right now the Red Sox are under investigation in their own regard. So let's say it comes out that the Red Sox did get this memo. And now what's to say under Manfred's logic that they shouldn't be punished? They had knowledge of it, right? So you could be facing a scenario where the Red Sox were on notice, but can you really punish the Red Sox without punishing the Astros? So definitely a lot more, before we see the end of this.
We're talking to Dan Lust, a sports litigator. Miles Garrett, Mason Rudolph legal drama. What can you tell us about that? Defamation civil case, assault civil case. What's going on there?
So just for those that don't know, we had some developments this past week. So back in week 11, this is back in November, we've seen the clip 100 times. Miles Garrett taking Rudolph's helmet and slamming him over the head with it. The reason we're talking about that now in February is because the NFL decided that there, at a time, it was called an indefinite suspension to Garrett, that they were going to cap it at 6 games. So he's going to be back for the preseason, week 1, all that fun stuff. And this week, in kind of the Miles Garrett redemption tour, Garrett and his team thought it would be good for him to go on ESPN, a very public platform, and to reiterate his position that Mason Rudolph uttered a racial slur to him is what kind of got him going. And you know, he doesn't excuse what he did. He said it was still wrong, but he did it because of what Mason Rudolph said. In response to that, we've seen really Mason Rudolph's entire team come back swinging. At first, that's Rudolph himself. Then his agent slash attorney put a statement out online that there was no corroborating evidence by the NFL. No players heard it. No microphones picked it up. So this is, according to Rudolph's people, just pure defamation, right? This is a false statement, and it's done to harm Rudolph's reputation. And if that wasn't enough, John, yesterday Mike Tomlin goes on ESPN and says the same thing. He spoke on his own regard. He did his own investigation. There is no evidence of his quarterback saying that statement. So we kind of talked just, you know, the two, first two elements of defamation. You have to prove the statement's false, right? Maybe they've already done that. There's nothing that's come up in the NFL's investigation. You have to prove that it hurts your reputation. And I think that's pretty obvious, right? You're getting called a racist. It might hurt your reputation in some way, shape, or form. But, John, the third part of this, there's really two questions, right? Could Mason Rudolph sue? Yeah. I mean, you can always sue. But the question is, will he win? And this is really this third element. It's something called actual malice. It's not so complicated. But basically, Rudolph has to show that Miles Garrett fully knows what he's saying is wrong and is saying it anyway. And that's because Mason Rudolph, as a quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, is a public figure. And that's why, John, when you go to the supermarket, you look at the tabloid section, you see 20 newspapers that all look like they're lying about something with a celebrity. That's why they're allowed to do it, because there's a heightened standard for defamation when it comes to celebrities or someone like Mason Rudolph, a very public figure on the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Is it possible Rudolph, his action here is just simply to very publicly clear his name, even if ultimately he gets no result litigating?
I think that's essentially what he's done, right? He went out and said it. His attorney made a very public statement. And his head coach, I don't want to talk about necessarily racial undertones here, but I think it does appear to be a lot when Mike Tomlin, as an African-American, is standing behind his Caucasian quarterback in an allegation of a racial slur. So I think that his team, you know, and obviously his own team, the Steelers, are fully standing behind their quarterback. There's short of actually filing the lawsuit, I'm not sure there's much that he else can do at this point. And I'm not sure how smart it would be for his image to actually file this lawsuit, because then we'll spend another year talking about whether or not it happened. There'll be depositions, discovery, public filings. And I don't think that's going to make this go away any faster.
We're talking to Dan Lust, a national sports law analyst, heard on ESPN and Fox Sports. He's an attorney with Goldberg Sagala, formerly with the New York Giants in public relations. How does that experience with the Giants help you now as a litigator working in the sports forum?
It's funny, you know, really in this particular example is the best one, right? So I was with the Giants really from 2008 to 2012 in the height of the Giants run, unfortunately not in the low light of the Giants run, as is happening right now. Brighter times are ahead. But I digress. The reason I bring up that period of time, we had the Plaxico Burress incident happen, you know, in that same time frame. So when you have an incident like that, right, it's very important to stay close as a team. And, you know, maybe there's something, if someone said to the media, it could kind of build the story out further and further. I think it's very important, at least in this Miles Garrett, Mason Rudolph situation, I haven't heard any other players' names mentioned, right? We've said there's no, you know, there's players haven't confirmed that this statement has been made, but no one is really doing their own media interviews and saying, hey, I didn't hear anything. I was right there. I was 2 feet away. I didn't hear anything. So I think, you know, just the Giants' MO and most NFL teams, less is usually more. The less you say, the more the story will go away a little bit faster. And that's, John, just to go back, I mean, that's what we're seeing with the Astros stuff. The story is continuing to grow legs, because players around the league are breaking that fourth wall, and they're talking about it. And the more they talk about it, the more you and I talk about it.
Dan, let me ask you, in a weird story that I saw on your Twitter timeline, you've got a former Major League Baseball player, Brett Gardner, who's got a stalker. She's suing him? What's going on with that?
So I'll correct you for a little bit. It's not a stalker. It's actually called a stage five clinger. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'll break it down. It's truly a bizarre case. Brett Gardner has a female fan who has developed a relationship with Brett Gardner. The only problem is that Brett Gardner has never met this woman, never spoke to her. This woman claims in a lawsuit that she's filed against the New York Yankees and Brett Gardner, that she has been barred access from Yankee Stadium, that she's trying to go, she's trying to meet Brett Gardner at spring training. She is asking a court to allow and compel her access to the stadium. So the reason that's in the news this week, it had gone pretty much undetected. No one had really seen it. But Brett Gardner, on the eve of spring training, right when there's going to be less security for New York Yankees spring training, he's asking for a formal restraining order to be issued by the court. And it's kind of a rare case, right? Someone is being sued. Brett Gardner is being sued, yet he's the one asking for a restraining order. I have it on my timeline, John. This woman has sent messages to Brett Gardner online. She has viewed his banging of a bat on the dugout wall as some type of Morse code to send him some type of sexual signals. Truly, truly bizarre stuff. And at this point, could there be a stalking criminal charge, harassment? I mean, you'd expect so at this point.
It's bizarre. I mean, and this stuff, I mean, I would hate to say it only happens in sports because it doesn't, but it's on our radar because it's in sports. You love what you do?
I do. Yeah, I do. It's a nice area. I mean, the sports law, even this past week, our topics today we're talking about, John, sometimes it helps to have an attorney who just has, understanding of this. The defamation suit's interesting, right? The Brett Gardner stuff is absolutely wild. And the sign stealing stuff, I mean, I don't know how many more lawsuits we're going to get in this, but we've seen at least three different types of people. I mean, so you do need, it does help to have an attorney who's had a kind of all-encompassing background for this.
I think it's really interesting, too, full disclosure for our listeners. You and I were going to have you on as a guest maybe a few weeks ago, but your firm was involved in some of the litigation and it wasn't appropriate for you to come on. There are cases that you can't talk about because you're involved in them.
Yeah, it's a good and bad problem. The more cases you get, the less you could go on the air and talk about them. It's the beauty of working at a firm that has a big sports practice. In some way, shape, or form, we represent the majority of teams in professional sports in various capacities. It's a blessing. But again, the more notoriety that comes with these cases, the less you really can speak about them and for fear of divulging maybe what your arguments are going to be or what something you might have learned in confidence from a client. It's par for the course, but definitely a lot of fun.
The idea of name, likeness, image with NCAA, can we talk about that?
Of course. And John, I'm not sure if you saw my big article I put out towards the end of last year. I'll give it to you briefly. What we have right now, California came out and they said in 2023 that we would have some type of name and likeness code in something in California. And the NCAA kind of got ahead of it as other states started to mount, be it New York and Pennsylvania, Florida. And the NCAA said, guys, we hear you. We're going to figure it out on our own. The problem with that is it's almost been 6 months and there's really been no signs of movement. What is now being threatened in the state of Florida is that Florida is going to enact if it passes legislation, which it very well might, but their name and likeness legislation is going to go into use before the NCAA allows it. So in theory, right, Florida could end up with, hypothetical LeBron James of high school because they want to go to Florida and get paid. So what I wrote about, I think it's a really interesting thing just to look out for these next couple weeks, months. The NCAA has done it in the past, and I wouldn't rule it out this time. If there is a state or a particular school or a conference that goes in contravention to their rules, their stated rules, they've in the past threatened to ban those schools from athletic competitions. So it's happened in the past. It happened, back in the 80s was the most recent one. I really wouldn't rule it out. The College Football Association, I don't know if you remember that way back when, John.
Yep.
But that reshaped the way that we thought about college football on television. Now we have television on a number of networks. It's all over the place. So if something like that happens, if there's a ban, I mean, really, it's anyone's guess what will happen.
All right, before I cut you loose, a lot of listeners wanting to know what you think the ultimate disposition will be with the Astros, those lawsuits, Manfred. Your view from 20,000 feet, where does this end? Where are we in 18 months?
So, you know, it's kind of like a drip right now, right? We have different cases coming in. We've had two just in the past week. I think we're going to, I said, you know, I think it's possible we get up to double digits, if not more. Astros fans are angry. Different players are angry. You know, you have advertisers that might also file suit, the latest one that might be on the horizon. So, you know, the issue with these cases, right, some of them for fans, right, fans don't really have standing to sue a team. It's different from a player, for example. But if you do get past the motions for summary judgment, motions to dismiss at the beginning stages, where this all kind of comes to a head is a period of depositions, right, when you can hear exactly from the horse's mouth who did what, who was using, you know, what type of technology. So I don't see this going away anytime soon. There's just too many different cases of different nature. It's not going to get, you know, swiftly done away with motion practice. So I think this continues throughout the year. You know, I think we're going to start to learn a lot more the more cases hit a courtroom.
All right. I appreciate your time and jumping on. Dan Lust, sports litigator. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, John. Happy to come on anytime.
All right. There he is. Sports and litigation. I hate when the courts get involved, but man, it's kind of the world we're in. 2020. Can you imagine that you're getting sued by the stalker? Like, and I looked at her Twitter profile. I'm not even going to glorify it. She's out there. Brett Gardner got a problem. All right, coming up, some final thoughts. Chelsea Audio Video, the audio and video experts, they have a team that is second to none when it comes to design and installation. Ann and I walked into their showroom. We pushed buttons. We flipped switch. And in the end, we looked at blinds and security cameras and speakers that could be embedded in the wall so that they have no profile. And we invited Chelsea Audio Video to come out to the house and install their Control 4 system. The network is amazing. The security cameras are second to none. And by the way, I've got control of everything at my fingertips almost at all times. Chelsea Audio Video can do that for you. Go to their website, chelseaaudiovideo.com. That's how you start the journey. Leave it here. Feeling like we should put a treadmill in here when I do the show. I could be on a bike. I've been riding a bike a lot, but maybe a treadmill. Would that be distracting if I was running on the treadmill?
I think it'd be great.
Be like out of breath, you know?
You could hear it in the background.
That thing. I'd have to thank Reflex. That would be the shout out I'd give. Every step I'd be like, thank you, Reflex. That could be a sponsored thing, the team at Reflex. You know, I'm only able to run on the treadmill because of Reflex right now. I do think about it. We have stairs at our house, and I, in the time we've owned this house, I used to go up the stairs and I'd be like, oh man, I got to go up the stairs with every step. Stem cell treatment, PRP, reflexknees.com. That's all I can say. My case study is on their website, and you can see it if you go to their website, reflexknees.com. You can literally see my case study and what I've done. You had knee pain. If somebody you love has knee pain, this is your ticket. ReflexKnees.com. It's been a great radio show. We still have a couple more minutes, but we started it by talking to Nick Daschle of the Oregonian, who talked about Oregon State women's basketball in particular. We've talked about the Oregon State men as well, but the Oregon State men. I mean, if the Oregon State men won four out of their next five games and they win a couple games in the Pac-12 tournament, they're probably a tournament team. But the bottom line is the Wayne Tinkle era includes an NCAA tournament appearance, and the fact that they're not awful this year closes the discussion on whether or not, oh, should he be fired, should he not? You don't just fire a guy who is the only coach to get Oregon State to the NCAA tournament in 30 years. You don't fire him because, oh, they're middling along. And by the way, they beat Oregon, they beat Colorado, they beat Arizona, they beat the best teams. They're just struggling with consistency. And yeah, he's got to fix that. But you don't fire him for that. We talked to Nick Daschle of the Oregonian earlier in the show. Bill Shonley was with us. Today's the anniversary. 49 years ago today, Bill Shonley said Rip City for the first time. Now, it was a 1970-71 season. Shonley tried to tell me that it was, incorrect, but it was February of 71 that he said Rip City. I know it because I've doubled and triple checked it. And I feel like when I talk to Bill Shonley, I'm talking to like my grandpa. I'm not going to correct him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can't tell him he's wrong.
No, Bill, you don't know what you're talking about. It's the season began in October of 70. It had to be February of 71. I'm not going to say that. I don't even know what I said when he tried to correct me.
You just rolled with it.
I think I said...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.